This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, ladies, let's have a look at some more of this intriguing stuff. One moment during this morning's men's shiur, a few of them thought that I had said that there's no such thing as the world to come.
So they
thought, no, this is now this is getting a little bit much. And then I said, and this God business we've got to reconsider too. So as we go through the process of stripping this belief and faith down to its fundamentals, let's try and understand. And today we'll do some of the other views on the matter. And of course, in Shul last Shabbos, we had the one prime example. There is Abel, a very good guy, does everything right, brings a sacrifice to God from his best, goes out of his way to bring the best things he's got, sacrifices them to God. God is very happy, God accepts it, and the next minute, he's dead. Why? How does one understand that? Why do bad things happen to good people? That's the first time that question should be asked. It's interesting that people tend to ask the question only when bad things happen to them. But when we learn Bereishis as a child, that question should be asked. Why did a bad thing happen? That's when a teacher should start teaching the thing. And what's the answer? The reason teachers don't deal with it is because they have no answer. And what is the answer? Why did a bad thing happen to Abel? Because he had a bad brother. That's why he made a bad choice and decided to kill him. That's all. Now the reason. Yes.
Why did Abel turn out to be the villain?
So, well, not quite. I wouldn't like you to take my words on Shabbos to their total extreme. I'm not quite a villain, but I did show on Shabbos that Abel had...
He had
done some nasty things to his brother too. Isn't that right? And we'll discuss in a moment why that is. Now, there's some other interesting examples of this. The one is, remember the story of Jacob sending his son down to check out what's happening with the brothers. Brothers are shepherding the flock. He's worried about them, and he says to Yosef, go and see how they're doing. Listen to the Netziv. The Netziv is a really important link in our chain of tradition from the Vilna Gaon to today. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, a son-in-law of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, so two generations away from the Vilna Gaon, three. And he says, Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, and Yaakov said to Yosef, Halo achecha roim b'shchem, your brothers are looking after the flock in Shchem, lecho ve'eshlochacho alechem, go and let me send you to them so that you can see how they're doing. Asks the Netziv, why all of a sudden? Was this the first time the sons were away from home? And are they not big boys? Why does he have to send Yosef, the little brother, to go and check out how the big boys are doing? They're all together, 10 of them. Looking after, and he sends little Yosef to check up if they were right. What is he worried about? Explains the Netziv, very interesting. The reason for the sending of Yosef was Mishum Sheshama Sheroim B'Shem. He heard they were in Shem. Shem is Nablus. Nablus, as it's called in the newspapers. Shesham Mochem Sakono Revutso Mimase Shechem. That has always been a dangerous place. Since the time of Shechem, that was where Dinah was raped, and that's where the brothers went and killed. So there has always been conflict around Shechem. Aken Pochad Verogaz Lavova, when he heard that the brothers were at Shechem, he was very worried.
Why would he send another one to be worried about?
Right, good question. So why, if you're so worried, do you send another one? Often it's even better. Couldn't he hire a security firm? Couldn't he call the police? Couldn't he send a slave? What does he have to send his treasured son for? Answers the Netziv. Hello, Yoreb, if they have Sakoda, Gamala Ever, he was afraid to send a slave. Because why would he send a slave to a dangerous place? You don't like that answer?
No.
Why?
More so to be afraid of
Yosef. But he was quite satisfied. Yosef was a tzaddik, no harm was before him. See? So does that agree with the Rambam?
No.
No, it doesn't.
I'd rather go by Yaakov.
You would rather go by Yaakov than by the Rambam.
What happened to Yosef? Not only that, but that helped in finding Hashem, helped him to find the brothers.
Who helped him and the Nassif said it's quite clear that the whole thing was acting out God's plan that he should land up in Egypt. The Nassif explains further. He asks another question. He says, do you remember what happens then? The brother Yosef comes, the brothers find him, they want to kill him. And who intervenes?
Reuben.
What does Reuben say? That do what? Let him into the pit. What's in Reuben's head? I'll come back later and I'll pull him out of the pit. What was inside the pit? What chance did Reuben think there was of Yosef surviving the snakes and scorpions? He thought he was a tzaddik. Right? So once again we see he's such a tzaddik, he won't be damaged by snakes and scorpions. If he's such a tzaddik and he won't be damaged by snakes and scorpions, why not leave him with the brothers? What happened when Paro tried to chop off Moshe's neck? It turned into stone. The guillotine broke. So you see that if you're a tzaddik, you can be saved. So if Reuben believed that he was such a tzaddik that the snakes and scorpions couldn't harm him, why did he worry about the brothers? Doesn't sound right, does it?
No, but it doesn't sound, these are real people.
It's what you say now, but it's not what you were saying 2 or 3 weeks ago. 2 or 3 weeks ago, you'd bought into that hook, line, and sinker. You didn't like the new stuff. Isn't that right?
Well,
A week or two ago, we had problems with the fact that maybe it isn't so simple.
So
you're saying what you've been taught sounds very fairy tale-ish.
Yeah.
Okay, so
we've always been taught that we shouldn't depend on that.
But then why are you depending on throwing him into the pit, into the snakes and scorpions? If you don't want to depend on it, don't put him into the pit with snakes and scorpions. And if you're relying on his tzidkus with the snakes and scorpions, leave him where he is. Says the Nativ, listen to his words carefully. Because he was afraid of the brothers, says the Nativ, Yoyori min ha'achim, mishum tebechiro sheba'odom ulamalo mihashkocha ha'elyona. Because human choice supersedes God's will. Okay, so this is not Rabbi Rappin anymore, this is the Nitziv.
That's a question.
Imagine if one would say nowadays when you're teaching from school, human choice supersedes God's will. Those are his words. That means God can want A and you can choose to do B. And what you want will be done, not necessarily what God wants will be done. So God has given us the power to override his will. And they knew that. Let's go a bit further. He brings a proof from Daniel. However, Chalila Lomar, Chas V'Shalom, one should not imply She'en B'yad Hashgoth Elyon Nishmor Gamet Kirasol, that God cannot save one from human choice. Of course God can. God chooses not to. Elokach Yishlon Lomar, that is there, Bo'in and Zchus Yosef, that for God to intervene, to save us from human choice, needs more Zchus than to save you from natural choice. For a human being to be saved from another person's choice, the human being must himself be a tzaddik, not only in his relationship to God, but also in his relationship to other people. And then if he's a total tzaddik, both in God issues and in human issues, then God will intervene to save him. And that's why Yaakov was afraid of Lavan, even though God had promised him. He was afraid that he wasn't good enough to be saved from Lavan's free choice. And now if we look at the story, it makes sense. Yaakov knew that of all his sons were tzaddikim. So if Yaakov knew that his sons were tzaddikim, what was the chance of them getting damaged by the Arabs in Nablus?
That much. You said they were tzaddikim.
He thought, Yaakov believed his sons were tzaddikim, which they were.
Yeah.
Therefore he thought that they would or wouldn't be damaged.
Would not be damaged.
So why did he send Yosef? Why was he worried? About Yoreb, what does Yaakov think about his sons' interpersonal relationships?
Naturally.
Where? Why?
He liked one better than the other. He must have thought one was better than the rest.
a good point. The fact that he elevated Yosef seems to imply that he wasn't fully happy with them. And what else? And they showed signs of jealousy of Yosef. So in terms of the interpersonal relationships, Yaakov rates his sons at less than perfect. That's tzaddikim, but in interpersonal relationships, less than perfect. If in interpersonal relationships you're less than perfect, then what?
God went intervene
from human choice. So can Arabs and Nablus damage the brothers?
Yes.
So he's worried. So he sends Yosef. Can Arabs and Nablus damage Yosef in Yaakov's mind?
No,
because Yosef, he believes, is perfect even in interpersonal relationships.
But how could he be perfect in
interpersonal
relationships?
But Yaakov blamed them for that. Yaakov blamed them. Well, he didn't really aggravate them, he dreamed.
No, does Yaakov know that Yosef doesn't have the relationship with his brothers? He may think that
he knows that, but he blames the brothers for that. So in Yaakov makes a judgment, right or wrong. His judgment is the brothers are tzaddikim, but not perfect in their interpersonal relationships. Yosef, he believes, is perfect in both.
But it doesn't make sense. He's smart enough to know that if the brothers don't have a tzaddik relationship with his brothers, then it doesn't go both ways. Doesn't it have to go both ways?
What has to go both ways?
Doesn't it have to have a great relationship with God and with other people? Meaning that if...
It doesn't mean that everybody loves you.
What?
Having a great relationship with people doesn't mean that everybody likes you.
But then God's not going to save you from whatever.
He might do. He might do.
Great. Just what you mean by relationship.
A great relationship with people does not mean that you're popular. In America, it means that you're popular. But in other parts of the world, being a fine person does not necessarily mean that you're popular. You can lose an election and be a great person. In fact, it's more likely that you'll lose it if you're a great person. The brothers are tzaddikim, but not in interpersonal relationships. If they were, in Yaakov's mind, we're looking at Yaakov's judgment.
Right.
But Yaakov is not saying there are two sides to every story. That's a cop-out. Two sides to every story is what we say when we don't want to make judgments. Because it's not a popular thing to make judgments, because if you make judgments, then you've got to actually tell somebody you don't approve of them. And we don't like doing that kind of thing, because we don't like confronting people, as we've discussed. So we like saying, I hear what you're saying, I'm sure there are two sides to every story, so I'm not going to make it. That's how we feel comfortable. Yaakov's a mensch and doesn't do that. Yaakov says there's one side, when there's the side is truth. So let's get to the bottom of the truth. And Yaakov makes a decision based on his understanding of the truth, which may or may not be right, but that's how he reads it. He reads that the brothers are unfairly picking on Yosef. He elevated Yosef. Yaakov chose Yosef over the brothers. And they should have respected that choice and understood. So he blames them for initiating the difficulty. And if a person's out to create difficulty, it's not always your obligation to fix the problem. If somebody else is going for you, so he understands that Yosef has a problem with his brothers, but it's not necessarily a problem of Yosef's making. So the fact that he's unpopular with his brothers doesn't mean that he is the villain. The brothers might be wrong too, because Yaakov is happy with Yosef. Okay? So he sends Yosef in the belief that Yosef is not only a tzaddik in godly matters, but also in human matters, and will therefore be saved even from human choice. So Yosef is the ideal person to go out and check the brothers and urge them to move away from Shechem. And Yosef was in fact an outstanding person and never resented his brothers. So what happened then? So the brothers now want to do damage Yosef. What is Reuven's view? That Yosef is a tzaddik. What about in interpersonal relationships? No. If he believed that Yosef was a tzaddik in interpersonal relationships, he would have left him with the brothers. He would have said, try killing him, see what happens. Okay, so Reuven sides with the brothers against the father in the sense that he blames Yosef for some of the trouble. Yosef is a tzaddik, and therefore he will be saved from scorpions and snakes. But he's not an interpersonal tzaddik up to perfection, and therefore we cannot assume that he will be. So Reuven's job is to get him out of human danger into natural danger, because in natural danger he will be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to convince the brothers, if he's really as bad as you say, because what do the brothers think of Yosef? That he's not even a tzaddik in God matters. So Reuven says, I believe he's a tzaddik in God matters, so I'm happy to throw him in the pit. If you're right, the snakes will kill him, and you won't have done anything. If I'm right, he'll survive, and I'll come back and fetch him later on. And they bought into it. Why wasn't he willing to leave them in his hands, and why didn't they argue, but then let us kill him? Reuven's answer to that was, I agree with you that he's not a tzaddik in interpersonal relationships, and therefore, even if you're wrong, God would let you kill him. So if you succeed in killing, that would prove nothing. In Yaakov's mind, that would be a problem, because Yaakov thinks he's perfect. We know he's not perfect. The question is, how imperfect is he? So as you unravel that story with the principles that we're learning, it becomes very clear. But that's the only way to understand that story, otherwise it doesn't begin to make any kind of sense.
The sentence you read, God can save us from human choice, but for God to intervene from human choice, you need more
the person
choice
has to
than
be
from
merciful.
Natural?
Yes.
What was the thing?
Yes, to be saved from a natural disaster, you just have to be a tzaddik, and to be saved from a human disaster, you have to be a tzaddik gomer.
So when you read these stories about people who didn't get on the airplane that crashed, and they just made a decision differently, okay, that would be considered like a natural disaster.
Well, it depends. So let's look at the Singapore Airlines crash. Did that crash because it was raining, or did that crash because the pilot made a mistake?
Therefore, we don't know, or somebody left a piece of equipment on the runway.
But we know.
No, so we now know that he was on the wrong runway.
We just heard that
on the wrong runway.
Yes, we now know that he was on the wrong runway. He was told to take a left. No, that they do all the time. That was not the problem. That's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem was he was told to take the left runway, and he took the right runway.
But there was a couple that decided just before that to go back to New York a little bit earlier, or to California, and to hang out for a few days quietly and let nobody know they were back.
So now,
and
now
it was right on the part of
so
the plane.
Now depends. If this was pilot error, as we now know it probably was, and this couple decided not to get onto the plane, and it was God, then they are tzaddikim gemurim. Isn't that so? Because God saved them from human from human disaster. If the problem was the typhoon, and normally they take off in typhoon, and some freak thing happened that the typhoon dropped the tractor on the runway, then that would be a natural disaster, and they might be tzaddikim, but not tzaddikim gemurim. But it might have nothing to do with either of those things. They might simply have missed the plane.
But I remember hearing about one plane that usually was full of millions and millions of people, and none of them were on the plane. And it seems to me that could be considered natural, because it's different if somebody comes up to you and is determined to kill you and sticks a gun in your face and is going to do it. But if it's something where Hashem can easily, just make you think of something else,
sometimes
maybe
that's
considered in the natural category.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. We can't know, we can't understand. The question is, what can we rely on? What can we assume? And what we're saying is, if a person is a tzaddik gomer, both in interpersonal and in godly matters, he can assume God will protect him from everything.
But who can say that they're a tzaddik gomer?
Very few people, and in fact it becomes an act of arrogance. So now if I say, I'm sure God will save me, I don't have to worry, now it becomes arrogance. So you should. So you won't even be saved from the natural disasters anymore, because it's an act of arrogance in that case.
But what about the Holocaust? There were some, weren't there?
Some tzaddikim who got damaged in the Holocaust, there we've got to say two things. Either the Holocaust was not natural, and this was something so absurd that it goes beyond natural cause, and this was God in whatever way one wants to understand it, or no, this was not just human choice. Then comes the question, then is Hitler responsible if this was God, which the Rambam deals with next. Or the other thing that one can say is that sometimes good people get caught up when there's destruction. Even good people sometimes suffer when there's massive destruction. It happens. God doesn't pick out if there's an earthquake and you happen to be standing there. You don't get suspended in midair, even if you're a tzaddik.
Sometimes.
Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. Depends on the weighing up and how serious it is and how much he wants to make the earthquake and how much he wants to save the tzaddik. That's why we can't know. There are so many factors that it's impossible for the human mind, even if they knew all the factors, it would be impossible for the human mind to work out the ramifications. Sometimes God will intervene, and God does intervene with us even though we're not tzaddikim sometimes. The fact is, God does sometimes save us. In fact, he's saving us all the time from all sorts of things. And why is he doing that? Not because we're tzaddikim, but because he wants our children to benefit from us. He wants our friends to benefit from us. Whatever the story is, there's some other reason. When a person benches a gomer, what is he saying?
Thank you for that. I could have been killed so easily.
That's not what he's saying.
No?
That's almost what he's saying, but it's not quite what he's saying when he benches a gomer. When a person benches a gomer, he's saying, I should have been killed. Well, I could have been killed. I should have been killed, because I know I'm not a tzaddik gomer. So if I was in danger, I should have been killed. says, the bracha is Hagomel lechayovim tovus. God, you do good deeds. You do good things for people who are indebted, who are obligated. And I recognize myself as one of those people, and still you've done something to save me. So you're thanking God. So does God sometimes save us from danger? Yes, even though we're not deserving. Yes, of course He does. But you can't assume it. You can't rely on it. You can't always interpret it that way. You don't know. All you can know is that if you're a tzaddik gomer, then God will save you. Now, one of the other stories of the Torah that we've got to look at that is seriously questions all of this is the story of Yosef. He's in jail with the butler and the baker. They have a dream. He interprets the dream. The butler will be restored. The baker will die. And then he says to the butler, when you get out of here, remember me to Pharaoh. Afterwards, we're told it was 2 years later when Pharaoh had dreams. And it says this, the butler forgot him. Rashi brings the Gemara that says, Mipnei she'tolo bo Yosef lezochroi, because Yosef relied on the butler to remember him, whose katli yos also shteit shonim. He got another 2 years of sentence. So Yosef is punished for asking the butler to remember him to Paro, but isn't that what he should do? If you can't rely on God, you're sitting in jail, there's a butler, he's going to be back in Paro's office in a few days' time. Isn't a logical thing to say? When you're there, just tell Paro, there was a clever guy who could interpret dreams, you might have some use for him. Isn't that a correct thing to do? Why is he punished? That question is asked by the Chazon Ish and by the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi is, do you remember Rabbi J.D. Soloveitchik in Boston? Rabbi Soloveitchik's father was from Moshe Soloveitchik, his grandfather was from Chaim Soloveitchik, and his great-grandfather was the Beis Halevi. So he's one person who asked the question. And the Chazon Ish is another. The Chazon Ish died in the 1950s. And the Chazon Ish says the following. He asks that good question, as we've just put it. Yosef yoda she'en hatzaloso tzeluyo behishtadlus ma'akom yad Hashem. Yosef knew that his saving would not be dependent on his deeds, and everything is in God's hands. But since a person has to be active and not rely on a miracle, Yosef did the right thing. He said, I'm not allowed to rely on a miracle, let me do an action and then things will happen. So why was he punished? The butler is a politician. Do politicians do favors?
Yes.
When? Only when it suits them. So do you have to tell the politician to do you a favor? You don't have to tell him. If it suits him, he'll do it. And if he doesn't suit him, he won't. He's not going to do it because you asked him. Therefore, your asking him has no value. So your action has been an action of no value. But in bottle, it's been a ridiculous action. You've made an impression on him. If he wants you, he'll get you. And if he doesn't, he won't. You should know that he's not going to do it to do you a favor. He's not going to do it to be kind to you. He's going to do it for himself, in which case he'll do it whether or not you remind him. So the act of asking a politician to do you a favor, Yosef, the Chazon Ish says, was the flaw. He was asking somebody who doesn't respond to that kind of thing, and therefore it was an act of desperation. It wasn't an act of calculated hishtadlus. But be that as it may, we see the Chazon Ish brings in the idea that everything is in God's hands and nothing is really dependent on oneself. So what is he saying? So now you've got this kind of paradox that you've got to live in, where you've got to believe that everything's in God's hands, and you've got to act as if he's in your hands. That's why Bitzotin is one of the most... Yes, do action, because if you do an action that is desperate, then you're denying the fact that God is involved. Because what is the value of a desperate action? So when you're doing actions, your actions have to be strategic. They have to be thought out to be actions that can actually deliver the results. And if you can get the results without the action, don't do the action.
What happens if you know that you're definitely not effective? If you know there's no chance you're
saying. But he's saying more than that. So we're throwing in another. Okay, but we're throwing in. But he's not saying it only in respect to yourself. So we're throwing in as we're building this, as we're painting the canvas, we're throwing in another stroke of paint. I'm an atheist, but. yes, we can't rely on God, and we've got to act as though everything is in our own hands, and we have our own choices and must make our own choices, but in a kind of a way everything is in God's hands. How does that fit together? What fits together then, what we need to understand is that if we don't perform the action, God doesn't do anything. But we have no control over the success of our action. Absolutely no control. Once the action has been done, all sorts of things can happen because there's human choice again. Many things can happen. Even if you shoot the bullet, you have no control over whether that bullet's going to hit the target or not, because the target might move. There might be a wind. Who knows what there could be that could change that. So all you can do, and you are responsible for that choice, because you've done everything you can do to achieve a certain result. And therefore, if that results, you are responsible for that result, and you're credited with that result. But here's where the partnership comes in. God will do nothing without your initiation. And if you initiate the wrong things, then the wrong things will happen. If you initiate things that are panicky, that have no strategic intent, then nothing will happen. And if something does happen, God has played a part in securing the desired result. And that's where prayer comes in. So prayer comes in creating opportunities, as we discussed. Prayer comes in giving us the strength and the wisdom to notice the opportunities. Prayer does not come in and let me take the opportunity. That's me. I don't pray for that. But having taken the opportunity, I now pray again that my efforts will bear fruit. Because you can plant a whole field and there can be a plague and nothing comes. You can plant a tree and it doesn't give fruit. There are lots of things a person can do that would normally result in results and don't necessarily have to. That's where God plays a part again. The Beis HaLevi's answer goes one step further. And he says, we have to work out how to integrate this, he says, in theory, if one really had bitachon, then you could rely on God. Mm-hmm. If your bitachon, if your faith was genuine, then you could rely on God. But what is genuine? How do you test genuine faith? Genuine faith would be, you believe everything's from God, fine. So now, your friend or ex-friend opens up a business in competition to you, across the street from you. What does complete faith mean?
If you say it doesn't make any difference. I'll still.
You knock on his door, would you like my customer list? Can I help you with this? Can I help you with that? Because you're not going to take anything away from me, it's all from God. But that's still easy. The real test is, he says, thank you very much. Can I have your customer list? He says, sure. And he says, and he starts calling the customers in front of you. And he starts telling them he's opened up in competition, he's going to be giving a much better service, his prices are going to be better. And you sit there and you say, he has another one you can call, and he has another one you can call. That's still easy. The hard part is to go home at night and have a restful sleep and not be worried. Very few people are on any kind of level of bitachon like that. So we're somewhere in between thinking that it's all our effort and thinking that it's all God's effort. And we have to do enough, says the Beis HaLevi, to be able to sleep at night believing we've done our best. And that will differ from person to person. There are some people who believe that they are such tzaddikim that they just have to instigate something and God will take care of the rest of it. Other people are not that confident and need to do more. So each person has to do as much as they need to be able to relax and say, I've done my bit, I'm in partnership with God, I can leave it. But how much that bit is will depend on who you are, who you think you are, what kind of level of bitachon you have. That will change from person to person. But theoretically, if one were a complete tzaddik and one were completely relaxed about one's bitachon, then you could leave things to God and God would respond. That's the other extreme of it.
Clarification on something that you said before, the quote from the Mitzvah, the human choice. And she, I mean, an example comes to mind of your brother once. A close relative of mine intermarried, and I was very, very upset. And I said, God promised that, he's not supposed to do it. And your brother said to me, God promised that he would save the Jewish people. He did not promise that your relative would not intermarry. I was upset because then all his descendants, they would all be like, he promised the Jewish people would survive. He didn't promise on any individual basis. And, which is pretty smart, I thought. But is that, in the big picture, maybe one person or another person didn't get out of the Holocaust, but maybe the
the Holocaust had to be.
Yeah, there are certain things that
micro and macro.
Macro, certainly, God has a plan, and that plan is going to play out.
No matter what.
No matter what, that plan will play out. Who are the players? Who the actors will be depends on our choice.
Okay. So
both the villains and the heroes. People will choose what part they want to play in that acting out. But the scene will be acted out.
So the big
and we'll come onto that when we deal with when Rambam deals with Pharaoh. If it was God's will, why is he accountable? And if he's accountable, was it really God's will? And what does hardening his heart mean?
It's like Esther, you know, Vadisi, it's like it's going to happen, whether I can do it or not. Is that same thing?
Well, it's Mordechai's response to Esther. God is going to save the Jews,
yes.
Is Mordechai. Whether you want to be the heroine of the story or not is your choice.
But
God is going to save the Jews in certain things. Yes, the macro story, God will play out in his own way. But we can impact on the people. We can impact on some of the side routes that he takes. Whether we go to Mashiach by becoming great, or we go to Mashiach by becoming impossibly bad. Whether it takes not so much the timing, or something to do with the timing, we could impact on the length of the scene. There are things we can impact on, but the general, God has plans, and those plans will be acted out. Sometimes for individuals too. God has plans. And God always has plans for individuals, but the individual can destroy those plans. But sometimes not. Sometimes, despite the individual's choice, God plays it out because the individual has a bigger picture to play, not only his own life.
But you said that a bad guy can come up and shoot him in the head, and so all God's plans for that person are finished, right?
Sometimes, and sometimes God will save the person.
Sometimes
but the person cannot rely on the fact that he will be saved.
It
can happen that God saves him. It might happen that God saves him, but
you
can't.
What you really are telling us is that it's all very malleable and very...
That's not so malleable, but we can't understand it. How can we possibly figure it out? The factors involved are too great. All we know is that there's no undertaking that if you do the right things, you will be saved and everything will work out fine. There's no undertaking at all of that. The undertaking is you've got to do your bit. Here's the instruction book. Here's how you're meant to live. You're meant to live your best. I'm in partnership with you. There are things I will help you achieve. There are things I will... help others to achieve, even at your expense. There are things I will be less involved in and more involved in. You will never know and understand what the reasons are. All you can know is if you were at Tzadik Gomer, then God would intervene absolutely. And if we're not at Tzadik Gomer, then the levels of God's intervention depend on things other than ourselves. So when God does save us, it's not because we're deserving. It's for all sorts of other reasons. And when God doesn't save us, it's not because God is trying to be evil to us. So why do bad things happen to good people? Usually because bad people do bad things to good people. That's usually. Sometimes it's beyond their control. Illness, all sorts of things that are completely beyond an individual's control. And that is from God. When it's beyond your control, when it's beyond human control, then it is from God. It's not from a human being.
Can you say about the macro, inquisition is a macro type?
It would appear that God wanted a point to come where the Jews were expelled from Spain. That it had to be exactly those people at that time, that might not have been God's plan.
I just mean like a matter
right.
of, like a Holocaust, there needed to be a Holocaust.
It would seem so.
You know, it's like there needs to be certain periods of time
But also, one of the things that you said that I've heard before also is that when you believe that Hashem's in the world, you see things that other people don't see. Not everybody sees
opportunities.
And also, like, we learn that there's just things don't just happen coincidentally. You know, when you see a pattern and something just comes together
opportunities,
perfectly.
Opportunities don't come coincidentally. That's what you need to understand. That if there's an opportunity, that's not a coincidence. God creates opportunities. But the outcome of that opportunity is not coincidental. Sometimes that's choice. With the Holocaust and perhaps even with the Inquisition, what is also possible is that the Jews were bad. And that doesn't mean that every person who got killed in the Holocaust was bad. Doesn't mean that at all. But it could mean that the Jews...
And
that we brought it on ourselves, yes. Mm-hmm. That we brought it on ourselves. That was God. And God allowed it to happen. And there's so many possibilities. Could have been Hitler's choice. God didn't intervene. It could have been God's choice. Hitler was the vehicle. It could have been God's choice because of a macro picture. It could have been God's choice because the Jewish people had done wrong. The Jewish people could have been a sacrifice. You know, the little lamb that's brought as a sacrifice has done nothing wrong. It could be that it was a punishment. There are so many different factors that we can't figure out yet, we probably will as history starts playing itself out. If Israel turns out, if the state of Israel is today, turns out to be a precursor to Mashiach coming, then we'll know that the Holocaust had something to do with that process, because it was all, there was cause and effect all the way through. If God forbid we lose Israel and it has nothing to do with Mashiach coming, and then it took out our right that we had no right to be in Israel in the first place, the land does not belong to us yet, and we had no right to take it by force. That's the Netzukatism, which is not illogical.
Or it could be silly decisions right now.
Or it could be silly decisions that God is now responsible. Yeah, all these, there are so many ramifications. So all, at the end of the day, all we can do is look at our situations and the decisions we have to make and say, what's the right thing to do and what do I need to do to be successful? Then I need to understand that A, I need to have the opportunity for that success, and B, having done my thing, it's then out of my control. Then comes prayer. Now, I've done my thing, I need to pray that it will achieve the success that it's intended to, or that I intended it to.
How far does the world come to be?
All we know is that at the end of the day, that's where justice takes place. So if a person got his reward at this world, he won't have that much reward to come. If he was a good person who suffered in this world, he'd have a whole lot of world to come. We know that that's the place with the leveling ground. The scorebook gets settled in Olam Haba, that we know. And one of the places we know that from is from the story of Cain and Abel. Who would write such a weird story to say, here's a righteous man, brings a sacrifice, God accepts the sacrifice, and then he's killed. What does accepting the sacrifice mean? As I'll say, it means that he had the world to come. God accepted him. That's one of our first proofs of the world to come. So that there's a world to come, that we know, and that's okay, but that doesn't impact on the way we make our choices. What we're going to say is, let's try and summarize, although we've got to get back to the Rambam next week. Some actions that occur to us are the results, or most of the actions that occur to us are the results either of our choices or somebody else's choices. If we were complete tzaddikim, God would always intervene. If we're not complete tzaddikim, he sometimes intervenes for reasons unknown to us. We don't deserve that intervention. We have to understand that. And that's why we cannot rely on miracles. Since we cannot rely on miracles, we have to make our own actions. In making our own actions, we must do actions that make strategic sense and not actions that are stupid. In doing those actions, we need to know that the success of those actions are then dependent on God very often and not on ourselves. If we don't do them, there can be no success. If we do them, there might be success depending on other people's choices and God. That's the partnership. So is it complex? It's complex, but it's not confusing. It shouldn't be confusing.
Sounds like in the bottom line what you're saying is don't go into a big head trip. Don't think about something that can't be known anyway. Don't worry about it. Don't ask why.
Asking why, when you're asking why, is the opportunities. Why did I meet that person? Why am I in this situation at this time?
But even that, isn't that like, what should I do out of this opportunity?
Yes.
What should I produce out of this? Not, because if you sit around and why, the person will walk.
You're right.
By.
It's more what should I do. When I'm saying why, it's why. In other words, what does God want of me in this situation? What does God want of me? Why did God put me in this situation? Or why am I in this situation? How can I get the best out of it? And do God's will. That's what one keeps on asking with that situation. I'm in a situation, and there are all sorts of things that have come together to put me in this situation. God has played a part in that. What can I do? What does he want me to do in the situation? Not why, in the sense of what was God's intention, and why is he doing this to me? I don't know why. It might not be him. That's what we have. The important thing we have to understand is it might not be God. Don't blame everything on God. And don't, it might not be God. It might be someone else that did it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody in my husband's old office in Pennsylvania, he had a sign up on his door that said, guns don't kill people, bullets kill people. Guns just make bullets go really fast.
Are you close after
Shabbos?
No, I'm not there. I'm probably here.
Thank you. I'm afraid to get my
woman take them.
Thank you, Rabbi Lampton.
You're welcome.
Thank
you're welcome. Welcome.
What do you have?
Did I need
to
Oh, thank you.